Good afternoon. We're back with another episode of the Sean Mohus podcast, the week of February 25th, one of the final weeks of the college regular season. And here with podcast regular Michael Weisenberg. Mikey, how are you doing today?
Doing very well, Sean. How about yourself?
I'm doing great. Was able to watch a lot of basketball this week and this weekend. There are a lot of good games, a lot of rivalry games starting earlier in the week, Duke, North Carolina, then carrying over to Sunday with Michigan State. But in between, on Saturday, Duke won. UVA overcame a horrid first half to dominate Louisville on the road, and UNC laid the smackdown on FSU. But Tennessee lost in overtime at LSU on somewhat of a controversial call. And there's a lot of other good games that went on. Kansas getting smacked at Texas Tech. So why don't we start with the ACC and everybody's hot topic of Duke without Zion. I know you just watched that game against Syracuse, but what were your initial thoughts on the Blue Devils?
Well, obviously they miss him. But, it was pretty amazing that you had, guys you would think would step up with Cam Reddish and Trey Jones going 4-for-23 and RJ just living in the middle of that zone, making some good decisions and also going 14-for-20. Bringing up his season average, by the way, against Syracuse to a stellar 44% from the field after that 8-of-30 first game. So, yeah, he got to kind of take over Zion's role in the offense on that first game where he had a really dominant performance. Syracuse is, again, like a team I've seen a few times this year, and it seems like the middle of the zone there is pretty soft, and they're very susceptible there. I think Duke just shot horrendously in that first loss to them after they lost Trey Jones, of course. And, big-time second half from Alex O'Connell, who's a guy I thought would, maybe be a little bit more of a consistent contributor for Duke and definitely stepped up in Zion's absence.
Yeah, he definitely stepped up. 20 points, 5 3-pointers. He got some
17 in the second half.
I mean, well, that was really when in the first 10 minutes outscored Syracuse by 9 and then 6 in the last 10 minutes. Alex O'Connell, he got some shots up in the UNC game. He missed them, but he did get some action. Jack White was banished, didn't even receive any playing time while Coach K decided to burn Joey Baker's red shirt and throwing him in for 5 minutes of the game. But if they can get actual consistent play from O'Connell or even a little bit of experience, I think that'll just bode well and ideally building somewhat of a bench when or if Zion comes back, even though they have plenty of 4-stars and 5-stars down the bench, they have definitely not developed it. But a good win, still only 2 losses for Duke in conference play. So that matches up with UVA. UVA's only 2 losses coming to Duke, and then UNC with home losses to Louisville and UVA. But Syracuse, I know a lot of people had high expectations for them, returning Tyus Battle, Frank Howard, O'Shea Brissett, and those guys shot pretty poorly, as did Syracuse in general, going 5-for-23. But Tyus Battle was 4-of-17. And what are your thoughts on him this year and going forward for potential NBA status?
I'm just not very sure about him. I just don't know if he shoots well enough. And he's got a lot of tools and decent size for a guard. But yeah, it's always so hard to tell how a guy defends in his zone. And I think that's a thing that you kind of see universally with Syracuse prospects is, you're not completely sure how they defend at the next level. And then, offensively, I'm not really sure. As far as their other prospects are concerned, I'm not incredibly high on anybody on their team at the moment. But, do you have any feelings on Tyus Battle?
I did enjoy watching him back in the high school days of how hard he competed. I remember first seeing him play on the U16 level when he was playing next to Luke Kennard. But once again, not a great shooter. He's, you know, a strong guard, athletic, but overall not terribly efficient and shooting just a tad above 30% from the 3-point line this season. So, you know, not as a junior, former McDonald's All-American, was hoping for a larger, I guess, or more of an efficient role for him this year. And he's definitely struggled at times in some of the big games, although he has had his fair share of 20-plus point performances and had 32 in the first game against Duke, going 11 for 23 from the two, you know, inside the arc. So he definitely has his moments, but I think is more of a reflection of Syracuse, where some people had pretty high expectations for them, and sometimes they play well and other times they don't. And I think that's how Ty's battle season has gone overall. But just staying in the ACC, one of the early games, it was a noon start, so 9 out here on the West Coast, but UVA versus Louisville. And not sure if you got to watch that one, but in it, Louisville, they were up pretty big at the half. The crowd was going crazy at the Yum Center. They're up 11 points after hitting the deep three to end the half. They'd only made 1 2-point basket, so they were not getting inside the paint, but they're shooting the lights out. And then sure enough, when the second half started, UVA's D put the clamps on them. DeAndre Hunter got going, had 26 points, win a game where Kyle Guy and Ty Jerome only combined for 12. Braxton Keaton score. Jack Salt, he never scores much, but he didn't score. But Mamadi Diakite with his new hairdo came in and had 14 points and a handful of blocks. But overall, it was a very impressive second half from UVA. And for them, I mean, it's still going to, you know, wait until the tournament time to see what they can do, since they've proven over the last 5 years that they just run wild during the ACC regular season.
I didn't get a chance to watch the game. That's on my DVR list. But I saw what DeAndre Hunter did. And just wanted to say, if you're looking for a really good breakdown on Hunter, my friend Cole Zwicker just wrote a piece that is a 40-minute read and really, really went in depth, just pointing to, you know, some of the weaknesses as far as him not necessarily getting the most steals or blocks and, you know, percentage-wise, but also focusing on, you know, his strong overall defense, his ability to mirror opponents and affect shots, and also, yeah, the shooting, like, you know, and by God, like, it, just judging from the box score, it seemed like he was pretty lights out. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to watching that one. And another solid college basketball game that, you know, goes from one end to the other. Much like I heard the Oregon-UCLA game went this week.
Yeah, and we'll definitely get to that one.
For sure.
The Ducks close to your heart. One thing about one about Louisville is they're definitely in that, you know, there's a steep drop-off from the top tier of the ACC with UVA, UNC, Duke, and then you know, Louisville, Syracuse, Virginia Tech, you know, what have you. But Louisville has been the only team, you know, I think that has proven themselves in that top round. They beat UNC handily at home. You know, they had the against Duke at the Yum Center, and they gave that up and had a double-digit lead against UVA at home as well. So I know it's Chris Mack's first year, and he definitely has them playing well. They just need to figure out how to close games, but they're really the only team, you know, come the ACC tournament that I think can have a legitimate shot at beating any of those top three teams. And then in terms of UVA, I know in the second half, they came out with Jay Huff in the starting lineup. And at Huff, you have somebody that's a redshirt sophomore, 7 feet tall. I forget what his wingspan is, but I think I've heard 7'4". And I think he can make a a big impact going forward that, you know, for UVA, they always have their tournament issues. And I think he could be the one that helps them potentially get over the hump. You know, with Jack Saldi, you get a solid screener, rebounder, but he's not going to really give you anything on the offensive end, where Jay Huff can come in, he can block some shots, he can post up, he can stretch the floor. So I think he can definitely be a game changer, and especially going forward for UVA, will be a player that turns into a really, really good one. So last thing in the ACC, UNC, Florida State. UNC had a big home win after, you know, coming off the Duke win, and Cam Johnson led the way as usual, shot the lights out again. And that seems to be something he's been doing pretty consistently as really one of the top ACC players this season. Against Florida State, let's see, he went 18 points, 3 for 4 from three, and had 10 rebounds. So I think in any normal year, he'd be up for ACC Player of the Year. You know, we'll see how long Zion is out for, but he carried UNC, and Naz Little came off the bench and had a really strong game doing what he's best at, which is attacking the glass on the offensive boards, had a few monster dunks, and attacking hard off the dribble when he has kind of a mismatch. So it was a good game from him, and we'll be interested to see if he can put that together going forward, because every time you think he's kind of figured it out, he'll have, you know, a game or two where he regresses. So it'll be interesting to see how he can have his play over the next few games leading up into that season finale with Duke at home.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you mentioned Oregon, UCLA earlier. So switching coasts, UCLA, you know, the Pac-12 will probably get 1 to 3 teams maximum in. Right now, UCLA, USC, not looking likely, but UCLA did go 2-0 this weekend. They had a very close win against Oregon State, a game I was at that they led by 8 or 9 at the half, and ended up holding off Oregon State, who gave them a game in the second half and won by 1 point, I believe. And then against Oregon, Saturday night game, they were getting absolutely throttled in the first half, where Oregon was shooting the lights out. Paul White, Kenny Wooten was making plays, and UCLA just did not look like they were ready to play. And then all of a sudden the second half started, and Jalen Hands went absolutely nuts, I think hitting 6 or 7 threes in the second half, and Chris Wilkes hit some threes, and before you know it, UCLA was running away from Oregon. So I know as an Oregon Duck, you haven't been too thrilled with their performance this year, but going 0-2 down in SoCal, how are you feeling about the Ducks and about UCLA?
So, yeah, it seems like UCLA just kind of has Oregon's number this year. Oregon definitely should have won in Eugene, but there was a monumental last minute collapse there. And, you know, UCLA has a couple really talented guys. Moses Brown makes an impact just by being like big and a threat near the rim. Jalen Heron seems to, you know, have the upper hand on Peyton Pritchard. And Chris Wilkes is a really tough matchup for like a guy like Lewis King. It was really surprising that Oregon kind of went big in the game. I thought, you know, maybe with, you know, their guards and shooting, they would have somewhat of an advantage there. And I'm wondering, was that the case, like, when they got the lead?
When they got the lead, Oregon's offense really bogged down, and they were taking a lot of time on the shot clock, really working in the last 10 seconds, and, you know, really forcing the shots up. And then UCLA was pushing the pace, and Jalen Hands was hitting shots from all over, and Chris Wilkes was doing the same. So Jalen Hands is a guy that you've been familiar with. I think he'll definitely test the waters after this season. What are your thoughts on him as a potential draft prospect?
I, for one, haven't been getting the best vibes from him lately. I still need to go back and watch film on the game. But yeah, just from the first time we played, he made some, you know, a few big shots and plays at the end of that game. But yeah, just wildly erratic as a shooter. And you know, I guess the key to his success is the ability to hit those really long balls. You know, put some pressure on the defense there. But he's been all over the place as far as that's concerned. And like, you know, his assist to turnover ratio looks fine. But yeah, I'm not sure there's a great deal of buzz about him as a potential draft prospect this year.
So I think for UCLA, one, they're going to be going through a coaching change. Being there on Thursday, a lot of the wealthy donors were chatting about Tony Bennett. And I kind of asked, why would a guy leave UVA, where he's built a middle of the road ACC team into a perennial top five team, to come to UCLA, where one, the recruiting is going to be completely different. The expectations are different. And basically the response was UCLA at its high is a lot better than UVA at its high, but I think they're living in, you know, their own little bubble. But besides that, I think at the end of the year, Chris Wilkes will test, Jalen Hands will test, Moses Brown could test, Chris Smith could test. A lot of these guys are going to try to test. I think Jalen Hands, you know, not getting a lot of buzz right now. You know, he's shooting 36% from three on the year, shot 37% last year, shooting almost 40% in the Pac-12 with the highest assist rate. So he's been playing well in terms of athleticism. I would put him behind Ja Morant in terms of point guards that, well, in terms of athleticism, of point guards that could be entering the draft. So I wouldn't be surprised if he starts getting some buzz down the line. I know he has his warts, definitely, but I think with his athleticism, a weak draft overall, I think he's a guy that could potentially start getting some buzz over the next few weeks. I think probably the only guy on the UCLA team to get that. But another guy that you're familiar with, Louis King, or as Bill Walton would call him, Louis the King, which is a nickname I definitely enjoyed hearing it the other day. So I think he'll be, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think should be the Pac-12 freshman of the year. Was a very highly touted recruit. And I think, you know, has the size, shooting ability, athleticism that NBA teams want. I know he was kind of battling an injury from the USC game, but you know, one player statistically that he matches up with is Kevin Knox from last year. So what are your thoughts on him in terms of the NBA draft for next year?
Well, the fact that you just brought to my attention, I hadn't even really thought about the fact that Lewis might be Pac-12 Freshman of the Year. That is very surprising to me. But, I think he's been getting some decent buzz, and there have definitely been scouts coming to Eugene, looking at some other guys as well, but very much looking at him too. Very, very, like, soft stroke, just a nice shot. So, you know, can kind of kill from the corners. Doesn't do can dribble, is a sort of a secondary handler for us at times. But his decision making is still very erratic. And even, you know, he hasn't been the most consistent offensive player this year in general. But since Pac-12 play has started, you know, he's been very strong for us, has had a few really good games. Particularly, one of his better games was against UCLA in Eugene. And, in the Pac-12, he is averaging 15.6 and 6.6 rebounds, 1.3 assists, 2.4 turnovers. You know, you'd like to see that be a little bit better, but also shooting 37% from three. I think he's definitely entering the draft, and I guess he has a few guys kind of chasing after him for Pac-12 Freshman of the Year, but you know, maybe Brandon Williams, but he's really hasn't shot very well. I wonder if Timmy Allen from Utah has like a couple strong games, like maybe he'll be in the conversation as well. But yeah, it's been
that type of year.
An interesting experience with Lewis. He's had some strong games, but the Ducks still have very much underachieved, I feel, even with the loss of a guy like Bol Bol, who absolutely would have been freshman of the year.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, and his absence definitely let Louis the King play a larger role, because he really missed the first month of the season, and then was scoring anywhere from 2 to 11 points in December, and then all of a sudden Pac-12 play starts, and he started, yeah, you know, started off 17, 22, and 19. He only has one game that's under 10 points, so he's been relatively consistent. Would have liked to have seen him be a little more aggressive this past weekend in both UCLA and the USC games, even though he had 16 and 10. But I think, you know, right now he's not in any first rounds, and I think, you know, come the draft, I wouldn't be surprised to see him getting picked up in the first round. So one other guy I want to bring up from a draft perspective is PJ Washington. I know we chatted about him previously. You know, sophomore that tested, came back to school, and has been having an incredible SEC season, scoring well over, you know, let's see, he has over 8 games with 20 plus points, kind of a double-double machine. And I had an NBA guy tell me, and it sounds pretty crazy, he said, potentially top 5, top 10. So what are your thoughts on PJ Washington?
I was never the highest on PJ Washington just in general. But yeah, this season he's done some things to quell some of my fears about him as a pro prospect. In particular, I feel like, you know, he's definitely shot better. It seems like he's finishing more through contact. And, you know, you see a game like the Tennessee game where he was able to physically assert himself over a guy like Admiral Schofield, who is on the NBA radar, and Grant Williams. You know, yeah, I think his play in the SEC has been really strong. And I'm not sure about the top 5 to 10. I think that's maybe going a little – kind of off the wall, but he, to me, he's firmly in the first round, and could be like a mid first round guy, with, you know, some of his potential as a passer. And defensively, I think that's where, you know, you're gonna have to figure out what to do with him. Not like the swiftest guy on the perimeter, and can kind of get overpowered by bigs at times. But yeah, he's really helped himself by coming back this year. Last year, I think he probably still would have gone in the second round, but I doubt he would have gone in the first round. And this year, yeah, he really took advantage. And while he kind of had a tough start to the season, the conference play has done wonders for his draft stock.
Yeah, he's definitely stepped it up once conference play began. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see. Right now, Kentucky is projected at a 2 seed. So we'll see where they go. But in terms of bracketology, that is starting to heat up right now. The 1 seeds per ESPN, they have Duke in the East, UVA in the South, Tennessee in the Midwest, and then Gonzaga in the West. Do you think these are the 4 number one seeds come March 17th?
Probably not. I'm sure something will happen. They'll, you know, change one thing or the other. I saw Seth Davis today had Kentucky number one, which I still think is a little strong. But yeah, I could see, you know, maybe even North Carolina getting in there. I this may sound crazy, But what if four ACC teams are number one seeds? Like, that's not out of the realm of possibility.
Three ACC teams?
And Tennessee, Kentucky, that could very well decide, you know, who ends up being number one out of the SEC. And, they're looking good right now as far as these four teams. But, yeah, I could see Kentucky getting in there. I could also see, Kentucky or North Carolina are the two I would go with as possibilities.
Yeah, I think North Carolina, they're still a stretch, but whoever is in the ACC, whoever gets the one seed will have obviously the easier path, because then the 2-3 will potentially play each other. But I think right now, yeah, UVA and Duke are the favorites for that. I think the main question will come down to the West region of Gonzaga getting the one seed, or do they get a two seed? You know, with Gonzaga, had a pretty strong out of conference. They did lose to Tennessee and at North Carolina in back-to-back games, which are their only losses. And then they've kind of blown through the West Coast Conference, as mm-hmm. one would expect, especially with BYU and St. Mary's not up to the caliber that they usually are. So they basically will have gone January and February without truly being challenged. So I think that number one seed is up for debate. But just looking at the ESPN bracket in general, are there any teams that you think are overrated or could sneak in that aren't currently in there right now?
I don't know. I think Utah State would be kind of an interesting one. I know they're in the MWC, and right now they're in the last four out. But, I could see the Mountain West getting more than one team. You and I were talking about it. Minnesota being one of the last four in is kind of surprising. I know, like, San Francisco and St. Mary's, like, you'd like to see one of them at least, you know, kind of give Gonzaga maybe a run there. But, yeah, I see they're in the next four out as well. So, those are just a few teams that it would be nice to see them give a mid-major, like, a chance, because it seems like they haven't really been going – too much with them as far as the last few seasons, number of years. Seeing the Pac-12 with two teams, it seems like that's the way it's going to be. And if another team wins the Pac-12 tournament, other than like a Washington or Arizona State, I think Washington's pretty firmly in at this point. But Arizona State, I could see if a sneak team wins the Pac-12, I could see Arizona State possibly being knocked out, even with that Kansas win. And by the way, let's talk about Kansas probably not holding on to that Big 12 conference championship this year.
Yeah, this will be this. I guess the record is set to fall this year, especially given their recent game this week, getting absolutely blown out at Texas Tech. A good Texas Tech team, but right now Kansas is sitting at 9-5 in conference play. Kansas State, the surprise of the conference, is at 11-3, but still four games to go, and that should be one of the big games on Monday, playing Kansas State at Kansas. So that gives them one game to get back, and then we'll kind of see what happens, but it does look like the Jayhawk magic might have run out this year, but still a talented team with Dedrick Lawson and Devon Dotson playing really well. But yeah, Texas Tech looked really good. And, just going back to the bracketology, what you said about not having the mid majors in, I firmly agree with, and, when you get teams like in the past, right now you have NC State as a 10 seed, and but much rather see, I think the first four out, they have Clemson, Utah State, Belmont, and Lipscomb. Much rather see a Utah State, Belmont, Lipscomb in the dance rather than one of these middle tier teams that didn't really do anything in conference play and just gets to, you know, take advantage of teams in general being higher ranked. I think one thing to watch out for would ideally having Wofford lose in the SoCon finals. Right now they're number 26 in KenPom and slotted as a 9 seed. So I think they would be they would be in. So I would love to see UNC Greensboro, who gave Gonzaga a run for their money last year, or Furman, who already beat Villanova this year in the tournament, just to add some spice instead of watching a lot of these schools that, you know, have no chance of making it to the second weekend. And, you know, maybe they get a good matchup, but have really done nothing over the course of 4 or 5 months to deserve any extra playing time in March. And one thing on Wofford, I think the first game of the year, this has to be one of the more underrated wins of the year, is UNC's 78-67 win at Wofford to kick off the year. You know, not many teams would go play at Wofford. And that game, UNC led throughout. But I think as we look at it, that's probably one of the more underrated wins in college basketball this year, just given being a true road game and how good Wofford has done over the course of the season, going six. I think they're 14-0 right now in their conference play.
Yeah, I think that it'd be great to see UNC Greensboro, and they've had a really solid season. And then the other scenario, you know, possibly is if Belmont wins the OVC, do you think they're leaving Murray State out of the tournament? Like, absolutely not. They're bringing in Ja Morant, so yeah, that, like, you know, that could be a way for them to get a couple teams, and I think this could be a year that we see, like, you know, a few lower seeds really going far, because a lot of parity this year, I would say.
Well, last year was Loyola Chicago, so you know, I think last year, every year it's always a quote unquote weak year, but definitely this year, I think, is a little weaker than most, as you could look at the draft stock of a lot of teams. But, you know, one team in particular, I'm interested in your thoughts, and that is LSU, who beat Tennessee without Tremont Waters. And they've, I think, surprised a lot of people in conference play, especially given how early it is in Will Wade's career and the number of young players that they have on the team. But do you think this is a team that could potentially do some damage, or do you think this is a team that, you know, comes in as a 4 seed, 5 seed, and then they're out that first Thursday or Friday of the tournament?
Well, matchup's going to be really important, but yeah, they're very talented, and he, like, brought in a great group of guys. As far as talent is concerned, at least. Sorry to go off on that, but he has, like, a combination of, like, a few seniors and then some really talented freshmen. A guy like Marlon Taylor, who, like, jumps out of the gym. The athletes and the athleticism and size and length of this team, it's really something to contend with. And, like, yes, they have those huge wins, but even those games, like, you know, it was kind of down to the nitty-gritty, and everything kind of had to break in their way for them to win it. And you know, it's probably going to be wherever they play, it's going to be a high scoring game, and they're just going to have to hold on for dear life to pull it out. But the huge win against Tennessee this weekend, I don't know, man. They're going to be one of those teams that you really have to keep an eye on in the tournament, because they could definitely crush your bracket if you're too low or too high on them.
Yeah, well, they coming up this weekend, they play at Alabama next Saturday, and I think that game, Alabama's only 7-7 in the SEC play, but a lot of athletes in that game, and I think that could be a fun one to watch. In terms of kind of a look ahead this week, we mentioned the Kansas State-Kansas game on Monday, and then you have Marquette-Villanova this week as well. And then you kind of got to wait until Saturday for, I'd say, must-watch action when you have Tennessee and Kentucky going at it once again. So definitely a few good games coming up, and come Saturday, that'll be March 2nd, which will mean March Madness is just around the corner. So definitely getting excited for that. But any closing thoughts from you on any teams you're excited to see, or any players that you're looking forward to watching over the next few weeks of conference season?
Oh, so I just want to say we're going to have to do our awards chatter again for conferences. Like when we were talking about Marvin Bagley versus Jerome Robinson last year. Because I feel like no matter what, like the ACC player of the year this year has to go to Zion. He's just been so damn dominant this year.
This is the same thing with Bagley. He missed a significant amount of ACC play last year, and right now it looks like Zion could miss potentially six or seven games, depending on when he does come back. And I think there's no question when he has been playing in the ACC play, he's been by far and away the best player. But I think that leads to two questions. Is one, are you only looking at conference play or like conference statistics? And then two, how many games can one miss to be a true MVP? But I think we could definitely do that next week and go through the player of the years as well as the freshman of the year, so that we can see Louis the King and who else will be coming up as freshman of the year in some of these conferences.
I think you have to do like a balance of both though, Sean. Like and like conference play matters a lot more, but you know, to take away the fact that like even before, like Zion was better in conference than even he was like before conference. So yeah, I think you take both, but just the fact that, you know, they lost like one game with him playing like in conference, you know? So yeah, they were 11-1 when he was playing games. So yeah, I know he has a few games coming up. And usually, like, you know, the conference tournament doesn't really count for the conference player of the year, though. Does it? Like,
awards are usually right after the regular season.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah. If he misses the next four games, I still think he has to be conference player of the year. But, yeah, I am just very interested to see who's going to finish off ACC as the number one team, the ACC play. And yeah, that's something I'm going to be keeping an eye out for. And I'm sure you have an iron in the fire there as well.
Well, right now, I think Duke and UVA are the strong favorites with UNC definitely in third in terms of the odds. I think that obviously, the UNC or Duke at UNC game to end the year is going to be big. But if Duke does lose that, I don't see Virginia really losing a game. I think the game they could have lost was the Louisville game at the road, but they have Georgia Tech and Pittsburgh both at home. Both of those are going to be easy wins. And then they go play at Syracuse and at home against Louisville. So, you know, with Syracuse, Dr. Jekyll and Dr. Hyde, maybe Syracuse actually shoots the lights out and pulls an upset win. But I don't see UVA losing in any of their last four. So that just comes down to Duke if they can continue to hold it down over the next few games and can get revenge in Chapel Hill. But I think it'll be a long shot for UNC to get that regular season title this year.
Yeah. Just like the outright regular season. Yeah, true enough.
Yep.
Yeah. Well,
what about, you have any games that you're going to coming up?
Six teams can beat one. We saw that last year.
Yes, we did. It'll be interesting to see if we see that again. But, yeah, you never know what can happen. So definitely looking forward to for the next few weeks and seeing how everything transpires.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me on, Sean.
Yeah, thanks again, and appreciate you coming on and looking forward to chatting our Player of the Years coming up soon. So once again, thanks for listening to the Sean Mohoots podcast, and hopefully we'll have another one out this week. So enjoy the basketball week and talk to you guys soon.